Hey, happy Saturday morning to everybody out there. Hope you're having a great day today. This is Real Life with Beth and Rob. I am Rob, and that's Beth.
Of course they're having a great day. They are on their way Christmas shopping right now. They have their little
they've just
coffee beverage of choice.
I'll tell you, if they're out shopping today, they've got that post Thanksgiving in the crowd thing. So I'm hoping if they're doing that, by the way, if they're doing that and they're in the car or whatever, take a deep breath.
Think about your loved ones.
Enjoy the show. As you're stuck in traffic, you've just come out of some place with 10,000 people in a room that was made for 500.
Where everybody was trying to express how much they care about their loved ones through the gift of giving. It's a beautiful time.
If you're not doing that, happy Saturday, as you're doing something else.
I think they're listening to us because they're a little tired of Christmas music. So maybe I should be talking to the people that are a little over it.
I have purposely not listened to any Christmas music.
You haven't?
Oh, well, we've had this discussion
before.
I
started a month ago.
It's too early.
It's not. Do you know that there's a new genre that's called Christmas praise? And there are several new albums out that are Christmas songs that they have turned into praise choruses.
Huh.
So you would already know the words.
Yes, that's good. Although, you know.
Just add a little sleigh bells in the background, and you're singing about the bird.
Silent Night, I pretty much know those words already, so it's not a big jump for me.
Okay, well, look forward to it because it's coming your way.
Hey, two interesting people today before we let people know what's going on. Don Johnson is on. He's written a book called How to Talk to a Skeptic. Yes, you went with the Don Johnson. No, it's not that Don Johnson.
See, although I would look forward to talking to that skeptic.
You're showing your age right there. There's a bunch of people saying, what Don
Today,
Johnson are you talking
honor
about?
Of Don Johnson, Rob, is bearing in the studio a pink popped-up collar t-shirt.
No.
Polo shirt.
Yes, so everyone's going, oh, yeah, Miami Vice. And then there's a bunch of people going, I have no idea what these old people are talking about.
They've seen the movie.
So Donald Johnson has written a book called How to Talk to a Skeptic.
Yeah.
It's a great book.
Yep.
Very timely.
Yep.
So we're going to be talking to him. And Marv Newell, he's written a book called A Martyr's Grace, but Marv's been on the mission field for like 35 years or something. So we're really going to be talking to him about what's going on in missions, what's happening in the world, how's that changed strategies, and that's obviously a topic we're very passionate about, going on the, you know, what's happening in the world
yes.
and all that. So it'll be a very good, interesting show. So I wanted people to know, don't just tune out right now.
Yes.
Right? You're going to be stuck in traffic a while anyway, or you're going to be tucked in bed saying, I'm glad I'm not out there. So.
Okay, I got to ask you a question.
Okay, you always
Speaking
do.
Speaking of globalness. I just got
globalness.
Back.
Yes. Speaking of globalness.
Or globalization.
Yes, thank you.
Or global missions. I was just got back like 48 hours ago from a trip to Haiti.
Yes.
What would you do in this situation?
Oh my gosh. See.
We were in.
Hold on just a second before people. We have prep notes for our show. This is not on the prep notes.
Okay, we were
so
at the
go
airport.
Ahead.
I was at the airport on the way home, just spending several days there loving on the people of Haiti. One thing that, if you've ever been to Port-au-Prince, you will know this is true. At the Port-au-Prince Airport, every single of the tons of times I've been there, you see on the way out missions teams in their matching T-shirts.
Yes.
Who have been to Haiti, doesn't matter what month of the year it is.
Gotcha.
There's always multiple teams
yes.
at the airport waiting to travel
yes.
together in their matching T-shirts.
Gotcha.
There was a team. They had a T-shirt. It said on the front, literally, it's not about me. That's the only words on the front of the T-shirt. It's not about me.
In English.
In English. The yes. back of their T-shirt had a map of Haiti.
This is not going to end well, I can tell already.
And it says, spreading love and compassion to the people of Haiti. I already have like 10 problems with the T-shirt, but that's not the story.
See, they might be listening.
I'm not
you
done.
Know,
I hope you
half
are.
More listeners.
Okay, we were upstairs. I was getting my first cold Diet Coke in 4 days. I was very happy. Behind me was some.
So you're on the way out of Haiti?
No. Yeah, yeah.
Yes, you're
just
finishing.
Like, these people have just supposedly given love and compassion to the people of Haiti for multiple days.
Oh, no. This is,
they're behind me in line.
This is why we have show
One of
notes.
Them has a glass bottle of tomato juice that they drank, like a V8 or something.
Yeah.
It slipped out of their hand. That's okay. That happens. I drop things all
and
the time.
And it broke?
It broke and shattered everywhere.
Was there juice still in it?
Totally.
Okay, so it's a total mess. All right.
The trip leader says to the high school student or college student, whatever, hey, don't worry about it.
Uh-oh.
We'll let the airport personnel come clean it up. Go on downstairs. Just step over the mess. And I'm like sitting there going, your T-shirt says, it's not about me. And the back of your T-shirt says, spreading hope and compassion to the people of Haiti. What in the world are you doing letting the people of the airport who did not spill your drink clean up after you? What do you think they think about us when they see those things?
You're fired up about this.
Well,
where did this come from? Again,
I was
to our listeners, we spend some time actually preparing what we might talk about. So I don't know where this came from. It's just in the you're now in the mind of Beth Guckenberger.
Okay, so
that is like, hey, we're sort of focused on this, and then wham, a thought comes in, and we're talking
I'm
about
like,
it.
I'm like sitting at this like thing, getting my Diet Coke, going, oh, what do I do? What do I do? What do I do? I have so much to say. I like to turn around. What do I do? My friend's like, filter to me. And instead, I turn around and I said, you know what? I'd like to help you find a broom. Don't go anywhere. Stay right there. I'll go find it for you. You don't have to. I'll be right back. I'll go find it for you. So then I went and found them some cleaning supplies. Just gently giving them the hint that the problem is theirs to fix. So what would you have done in that moment? Would you have just acted like you didn't hear it? Not let the teachable moment that was probably not yours to teach walk right by you? Would you have involved yourself? Which makes me feel like an old lady that I can't help but keep my thoughts to myself. What would you have done? I almost asked him for a
that
T-shirt.
That was
the strongest thing I could have done. Strip right now.
Give me that T-shirt.
Right now.
I've got one that's for you, which says something about
something. Something. Would you say anything?
I probably just would have cleaned it up. I don't know if I would have said anything to that person.
So
maybe
godlike.
I would have or something like that.
Would you have been hoping they watched you when you cleaned it up?
No.
Oh. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, is the correct answer.
Oh, good. For one time, we're coming up, by the way, Beth, on our 100th show sometime. Our 100th. This could be the first time in our 87 shows or however many we've done, 92 shows or whatever it is, that those words have come out of your mouth. That's
Ladies
exactly
and
the,
right the
right answer.
Okay, well.
What?
Despite the fact that we had been living in the spirit for 4 days and ministering to the people, I did not have the right reaction as I lovingly handed
So what was their response? Did they like, oh, thank you for helping me, or were they feel awkward, or what was the deal?
I didn't really ask them how they felt. I could
just
see
you're a sensing feeling person. What did you sense and feel their reaction to be?
Shame. I'm just kidding. No, I'm just kidding. I'm against shaming. I'm against all forms of shame and all forms of guilt. That's a little disclaimer here at Real Life with Beth and Rob. Okay, moving right along. I'm sorry. I just wanted to know.
That was really out of nowhere.
Okay.
That was literally completely out of nowhere.
It was a wonderful week in Haiti, though, just in case you were wondering.
Yes.
Other than that.
And you're going again, like in spring or something.
Lots. Oh, yeah. If you listeners would like
to have a
trip to Haiti with a woman who you just can't ever predict her answers.
If you want, it would be an adventure.
It would be like none other.
Yes.
We would invite you to go to the back-to-back website, backtoback.org, and sign up for a Haiti mission trip.
And like the commercials say, back, the number two,
back.org.
Yes.
I do love that. Hey, I just saw on the news the other day.
Yes.
The sweet story about the Bat Kid. Have you heard that story yet?
Yes. I haven't seen any of the video or anything like that, but I'm going to have to, I guess.
Okay, so I had heard about the story, did nothing for me emotionally. I saw the video footage of the entire town of San Francisco.
Yeah.
And the Lamborghinis that were donated, and there was the Joker, and he helped this little bat boy.
Backstory. People are like, I don't know what you're talking about.
Make a wish, kid with leukemia. His wish is to be Batman for a day. The entire town of San Francisco came out. They dressed up. The police helped them nab a bank robber. They put him in the back of the thing. The kid got the keys of the city. He rode away in the Batmobile. There was a Joker. It was just beautiful.
So I haven't seen the video. Is the little kid like just totally
beside himself.
This is my thing?
He's five. He's in a Batman costume.
Did he know this was going to happen, or did it like they set it up, or did he like walk into a scene and they're like, we need Batman?
I think he knew it was happening because I saw one interview where he was looking out a very tall window and he looking down on the city, which was already lining up for the parade and all the stuff that was going on. So he knew that there was trouble and that that they sent out like a bat signal. And
right, but he didn't. They're like, you got to go.
You're Batman.
It wasn't like, hey, we're going to set this up and you're going to be Batman. It was like, hey. And so all of a sudden he's like, I get to be Batman. I'm in.
Totally.
Oh, well, that's awesome. Yeah.
And like Joker's like wrestling and on the ground, and he's like, you know, cuffing him up, and he's like 5 years old. It's adorable.
All right. I assume that's on like YouTube somewhere or something that I could find it.
I do like when we rally as a community for someone outside of ourselves. It was like a great opportunity for the believers of San Francisco to talk about what it means to do something for someone.
Absolutely. Well, that's a great story.
Just gotta tell you.
Hey, after the break, we're going to have a great conversation with Don Johnson, about his book, An Effective Relational Approach to Engaging Those Who Question Christianity, How to Talk to a Skeptic. So you want to be back right after this break.
This This past summer, I went on a back-to-back mission trip to India, where I met a little girl named Shailaja from an orphanage with back-to-back. She was a new child at the home and was having a hard time adjusting. As I began playing with her and painting her nails, I was reminded that this little girl was just like my sisters back at home in the United States. Instead of a face on a photo, she became a part of my family when I realized that I could continue to help her through back-to-back's child sponsorship program. Even though she lives over 8,000 miles away, through the back-to-back sponsorship program, I can ensure that her spiritual, physical, educational, emotional, and social needs are met. The best part about the program is when I come home from school and find a letter from Shailaja. I am so thankful for God working within both of our hearts in order to lead us closer to each other and closer to Him. Visit www.backtoback.org for more information.
Hey, welcome back. We hope you're having a fabulous post-Thanksgiving Saturday, wherever you happen to be today. This is Real Life with Beth and Rob. I'm Rob Hall, along with Beth Guggenberger. Beth, I'm hoping you're having a great Saturday. I know you are.
I always
You were totally, like,
Saturday.
Fired up, totally, like, out on a limb in the first segment. I was like, oh, my gosh.
I confessed my sins, and now I'm feeling vulnerable and close to our listeners. So.
Well, that's good. Maybe they're feeling a little bit closer to you as well. Hey, I'm looking forward to having this conversation. Don Johnson, he is the president of Don Johnson Evangelistic Ministries. He's he's a knowledgeable guy. He's got two master's degrees, a bachelor's degree in theology. He's written a book, How to Talk to a Skeptic, and it's really kind of an apologetics book. In addition to just equipping people to have, this is some stuff you can use when you're having conversations with a skeptic, which kind of freaks people out every once in a while, right? How do you do that? I don't know what to say. I'm afraid to be around them. They, whatever. Mm-hmm. So it's a timely book. It's a good book, and so it's great to have him on the show with us so we can talk a bit about it. So, good morning, Don. Great to have you.
Thank you very much, Rob. Good to be with you.
Excellent.
Don, before we get into some of the specifics that you really outline in your guide to this, how to have an easy, natural conversation with a skeptic, my heart for skeptics started when I began to love someone who was who didn't share my faith. And I was desperate to find common ground with them and desperate for them to understand. And so I was just wondering if there's a skeptic that you loved, and I'm not meaning romantically, I just mean you had a heart for, that kind of was the catalyst for this story.
I don't think there was just one. I have been blessed to have a strong Christian family. I think it developed out of ministry, though. There was many students. I became a college pastor, actually worked inner city for a long time with inner city youth. And just working with the kids and the young adults, I think, really helped me to want to have better answers. And that relationship, or those relationships, I do think really pushed me in this direction.
Hey, before we go any farther, this word apologetics, it sounds like it's a word, obviously, that's becoming more and more used and comfortable in Christian settings. But some people still confuse that with apologizing or... So give us an idea a little bit about what are apologetics, and what do you think is driving this movement for Christians to get their arms around it?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, when I think apologetics, I'm thinking 1 Peter 3:15, where Peter tells us, always be prepared to give an answer to everyone who asks you to give a reason for the hope that you have, but do this with gentleness and respect. That's the core, I think, of apologetics. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's not apologizing for our faith. It's just having an answer and an explanation for people when they do have hard questions, or when they don't quite understand, and we need to be able to try to help them along, lead them towards Jesus. And the reason I think this is becoming more popular, I think you're right, that it is becoming one of the hotter topics within Christianity, is that our culture is becoming more and more not just non-Christian, but anti-Christian, and people are becoming a little bit more aggressive. I'm sure that over Thanksgiving, people have had some conversations around the Thanksgiving table with family members who probably had a few questions, and maybe those people are realizing, I need a few more tools. And so because of that, in my ministry, I was getting a lot more questions from people, from Christians, who were saying, listen, I've got this family member, I've got this coworker who I'm not sure what to do. And so the material sort of developed out of that need.
Hey, we're talking with Don Johnson about his book, How to Talk to a Skeptic, an easy-to-follow guide for natural conversations and effective apologetics.
One thing we talk about on the show a lot is generational differences. And I'm just wondering, as we sit around that Christmas table to come, is our approach to apologetics or understanding not only our faith and explaining our faith, but listening to what other people believe, does our approach vary depending on the generation that someone is born into?
Well, I do think our approach does. That has more to do with the culture that we grew up in, probably. I think for the older generations, they grew up in a more Christian culture, whether or not they were believers, but just the worldview that they grew up in was more Christian, and they had more information about what the Bible teaches. And the younger generation just doesn't have that. They just don't have that foundational information. They're not living and breathing a Christian worldview in the same way that some of the older generations were. And that does affect our approach, I think. That does have to affect our approach to evangelism. In the past, you might just have to remind people that, you know, they should be following Jesus. They probably knew a few of the stories. Kids today don't know anything, and we really need to get, I think, much more foundational with them and start asking some really sort of baseline questions, because they just don't have that information that the older generation did.
So what causes their skepticism, that younger generation, if they're not doubting what they don't even understand? I mean, I know you talk about it a little bit in your chapter about hypocrisy, sex, and other causes of skepticism, but walk through with our listener how to understand the motivation behind their skepticism.
Yeah, I think a lot of times, I mean, people are complicated, right? We have a lot of issues, and there's probably many reasons ultimately that we're not following Jesus. A lot of the times, though, I think it is just ignorance. We just don't know. We have a caricature of God and what Christianity actually teaches, and we think that God is a big, mean bully in the sky, and so who would want to worship him anyway, and why would we want to follow this sort of capricious schoolyard bully type of character? That, I think, has been taught to the kids, you know, through many means, and so they start out with some bad preconceived notions, and then, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of other issues. Family dynamics and fatherlessness. I spend a little bit of time talking about fatherlessness just as a key element in why people don't understand God. And I think issues like that we do need to be aware of. It's not, you know, probably people are going to have intellectual difficulties with Christianity. They'll throw out a bunch of arguments perhaps against it. But a lot of times it's not really, that's sort of a, not so much a smokescreen, but just that's not the real issue, and the real issue is something much deeper, I think.
One thing that I really enjoy, the sort of an underlying assumption, even in the title, is that you're in a conversation with someone. It's an easy-to-follow guide for natural conversation. So you're in a relationship or a conversation with someone as compared just to talking to someone. And so it's interesting that you suggest that we shouldn't try to provide a quick answer to the first or even second or third objection that someone that you're in a conversation with brings up. And so why is that? Why should we not just immediately try to answer questions or objections that a skeptic puts out? Why should we let them talk a while?
Yeah, that's really key, Rob. I think there's several reasons that you don't want to come across just as, you know, that the preacher guy.
Right.
And one, like you said, is just to build relationships. If you ask a few questions and find out where the person's coming from and what their background is and what they think Christianity teaches, and just do a lot of listening at the beginning before presenting really anything, before presenting any arguments or answers or any of that stuff, it builds relationship. It shows that you care about that person just by the fact that you're interested in who they are. And that, I mean, that is so key that a lot of times we jump into, you know, they throw out an objection, we jump into a quick debate, or we want to have that quick answer, and we end up not only not seeming to not care about that person, but we end up talking about issues that they probably aren't interested in. By listening and trying to understand where they're coming from, we can actually address the real issues rather than talk past each other. I mean, a lot of Christian conversations, I think, they talk past each other. I'm addressing an issue that you don't really have, and you're addressing a God that I don't believe in. And so we just spend a lot of time talking past each other, and then we wonder why the conversation never went anywhere. One way to avoid that is to answer a lot of listen and just really ask a lot of questions at the beginning.
I've been a missionary the last 15 years in another country, and one of the things that I think about when I'm sharing the gospel with someone who doesn't share my faith is that I might play a role in their story, but I might not be the closer, right? Like, I might just take someone from some really negative impression of Christianity to having a positive impression of Christianity, and then that will set the stage for someone else to step on top of those shoulders and begin to build a basic understanding of the faith, and then someone, a third or fourth or fifth party, might do it. So I wondered if you might encourage our listeners that as they begin to engage in these conversations, that success is not measured by who ends up at the end of the conversation bowing their head.
Oh, that's a really good point, Beth. Yeah, that's so true, that you don't really know what link you're going to be in the chain, and you don't have to be that last link. I was actually sitting down with Lee Strobel just this last weekend, and he shared the same thing. He talks about six links in a chain, and generally we're somewhere along that there, but not usually the closer, like you said. And so one of the points I make right at the beginning of the book is that these conversations might, you know, you talk about a conversation, right? But it might take months, it might take years. These are ongoing relationship things. And even if you just have, you know, a few minutes on an airplane or something with somebody, that seed that you laid may bear fruit much later on. So, yeah, that's a really good point.
In this season where we're, you know, the holiday season, we're talking and thinking about Jesus and his birth. If the listeners have someone in their mind, a coworker, a neighbor, extended family member, that they believe is probably a skeptic, what would be your advice for that conversation starter to get over that first kind of hurdle of fear and start engaging one of these conversations?
Yeah, I mean, after you've prayed about it, which would be my first encouragement, yeah, asking just some questions about the big questions of life. I think people are interested in the big questions of life. And it's not so much that you have to have, I mean, people are fearful, I think, because they think they have to have answers to every objection that's going to come up. Mm. Not really. I mean, it's fine just to say, I don't know. You know, I think there are answers to that, but we'd have to research that. But we all have the big story, at least we should, the answers to those kind of broader questions of life. How do we get here? Why are we here? What's it all about? How should we then live? What happens when we die? People are interested in that stuff. And the Christian story, you know, at Christmas time especially, just focuses on what God has done to, you know, God's answers to those questions. Mm. And so Christmas, I think, you know, just talking about the Christmas story and how it fits in to the broader story of God really could lead to some cool conversations.
Don, in about the 30 seconds we have left or so, where can people find the book? You know, any other resources that you would direct them to?
Yeah, I mean, you can go to my website, donjohnsonministries.org, but it's available wherever books are sold. Every Christian bookstore should have it on the shelves, and you can find it at Amazon. Christianbook.com, I know, has a good price on it. So, yeah, the usual places you would find books, BethanyHouse.com, of course. The publisher also has it.
Don, thanks so much for being on the show. Timely, as you said, this is the time of year where the Christian story is at the forefront, and so a perfect time for this book to be out and for our listeners to grab it as they anticipate talking to people who might have some questions. Best of luck with the book, and thanks so much for being on with us.
Thank you very much for having me. It's been great.
All right, Don, blessings to you.
You know what I like about this conversation is that not once did he give us a cliche answer. You know, like, I think that cannot attract anyone. We've got to be genuine and sincere.
Yeah, I love that idea about listening, asking questions first. You know, those are relational things instead of just telling people what you think they need to hear. So, great stuff there from Don Johnson. We're going to have more great stuff right after the break. Marv Newell's going to be on, and he's going to be talking about some stuff we're passionate about, and that's what's going on in the rest of the world and how to engage in that. So, join us right after the break. This is Real Life with Beth and Rob. We'll be back in just a couple minutes.
Do you have a family member who's getting older and can no longer be safely left alone? Visiting Angels, America's choice in senior home care, assists senior citizens and adults to continue living at home and not have to move into a nursing home. Visiting Angels has over 400 franchised locations across the nation. Experienced, compassionate caregivers provide assistance in hygiene, meal preparation, and light housework up to 24 hours a day. Rates are affordable, and you can select your caregiver before service begins. Visiting Angels has cared for hundreds of thousands of seniors nationwide. Franchises are available. Call Visiting Angels toll-free today at 877-374-LIVE. To find an office near you, visit www.visitingangels.com. For home care for your loved ones, call Visiting Angels now at 877-374-LIVE. That's Visiting Angels, America's choice in home care at 877-374-LIVE.
He found shelter under the rock and lay there looking at the stars. God, do you remember me? In Tales of the Not Forgotten by Beth Guckenberger, Joel dares to ask for what he can't have. Serafina sacrifices what she can't afford to give. Abram looks for an answer buried out of reach, and Christina, saved by a mission, searches for her own. Follow these life-changing stories as they take you on a journey to faraway lands and unfamiliar faces. Travel through their challenges and see the hand of the great story weaver writing endings you'd never imagine. These are the tales of the ones the world doesn't see, tales of the not forgotten. In Tales of the Not Forgotten, learn how God is the great story weaver, weaving the threads of our lives into a strong and beautiful sign of His love. Check out Tales of the Not Forgotten book and missions materials by Beth Guckenberger. For more information or to purchase, go to your local Christian supplier or visit standardpub.com. See lives transformed.
Hi, I'm Fred Dreyer for Alpha Flex with Omega 5. When it comes to joint pain and inflammation, I'm an expert. I played 13 years in the National Football League. I've been hit and run over by the best of them. So when I have a flare-up, I don't want a painkiller. I want a solution. I've been taking Alpha Flex with Omega 5 for a long time now, and I'd be lost without it. It's powerful and natural, so don't settle for over-the-counter or prescription painkillers. Get Alpha Flex with Omega 5. It's the solution to pain and inflammation. Go to alphaflex.com right now and enter promo code DRYER. Order now and get free shipping and handling. And you can buy your first bottle at 50% off. That's 50% off, half the price. That's alphaflex.com. And don't forget to enter promo code DRYER, D-R-Y-E-R, for your 50% discount.
Last October, I went on a back-to-back mission trip to Nigeria, where I had a chance to meet the boy I sponsored through back-to-back. The moment I met him, it became real that Jeremiah was not just a boy in a picture. He was a boy with dreams, hopes, and a story just like my own kids. At that moment, I saw how back-to-back is changing the lives of orphans around the world. I realized that in the same way I'm here for my children to be part of their stories, I can also be part of Jeremiah's. In the same way that my children can be a brother or sister to each other, they can care for Jeremiah. They can write him letters and share their stories as they grow up. We can help him to receive an education and food to fill his stomach. But more importantly, we can be involved in his life and encourage him to follow his dreams. I learned that sponsoring a child through back-to-back is not just about financial support for an orphan. It is about allowing God to intertwine your story and your heart with a child in need. For more information on sponsoring an orphan like Jeremiah through back-to-back, contact 513-754-0300 or email at childsponsorship@back2back.org.
With Beth and Rob. I am Rob. That's Beth. Beth Guckenberger.
Happy holiday season.
Yep, happy Saturday after Thanksgiving, post-Thanksgiving Saturday. Hope you didn't put on too much weight during the holiday or whatever it was, but, ate until you fell asleep. That's usually what most people do on Thanksgiving, right?
Yes.
At least,
in this country.
I was just about to say, if you're an American. So, we've got a guest on right now who's going to talk about some stuff that we're really passionate about, and that's missions. That's what's going on in the rest of the world, speaking of in America as compared to the rest of the world. Marv Newell is on the show, and Marv's been in mission and ministry, Great Commission Ministry, for up to 35 years. He helps coach and mentor other people on the mission field. So he's about as knowledgeable as one can get about what's sort of going on out there. Mm-hmm. And so we are so excited that he's on the show. And so good morning, Marv. How are you?
Well, Rob, I'm doing fine. Thank you for inviting me on.
Oh, absolutely.
Marv, my name is Beth, and I have been a missionary for the last 16 years in various countries around the world. And I was talking to Rob, one of the reasons we were excited about having you on is I was saying that things are moving and changing so fast. The pendulum continues to swing in the direction of sustainability and not creating dependence around the world. And I like some of the experiences you've had, both over the longer career than mine, of course, but then in academia. And just give us kind of an update. How are things changing in terms of methods and focus? And is my perspective that things seem to be shifting really on par with what's going on around the world?
Why, sure, Beth. Hey, thank you for asking that question, and it's great to know that you're involved that much in the Great Commission as well. Certainly, God does want us to continue to bring as many people as possible to himself. And, you know, over the last 35 years that I've been engaged in mission, you know, I've seen actually a methodology. Three shifts take place. Back when I started out, there was what was called the church growth movement, where we tried to bring as many people as possible and get the low-hanging fruit people into the church. And then that was back in the 70s and 80s. And then in the 90s, there was a switch that took place to the church planting movement, where the idea was, no, we should go to the hardest reach peoples, to the least reach peoples, and start church planting movements among them. And that went on for about 20 years, and it continues to go, and it's very strong, and rightfully so. But now what I'm seeing, Beth, is that we're moving on to what's called disciple-making movements, where what we're seeing is that the quality of believers are just as important as the quantity that we're bringing in. And the whole idea of making sure that we're making disciples, just not plain converts, of those that we are reaching. So over the last decades, I've seen it go from the church growth movement to the church planting movement and now disciple-making movement. And I think that's a good thing.
Hmm. You know, you have talked about the phrase majority world mission movement, majority world mission movement. Tell us a little bit about what that is and how it might be impacting the efforts that you just talked about.
Well, the church overseas, Rob, is growing by leaps and bounds, as you well know. And as the church continues to grow outside of the non-Western realms of the world, there's a majority world mission movement that's arising out of those churches as well. And they are taking on the task, embracing that task and taking it on in unprecedented ways. And they have goals and that are just far-reaching that not only complement what we do from the West emissions, but even exceed those. And so we call these people majority world missions. I guess that's everything that's non-Western or non-centered in the North Atlantic countries of Western Europe and North America. Those mission movements are actually now stronger when you pull them all together and larger than everything that we're doing here through our Western countries. Mm-hmm. So, Korea is a case in point. There's now over 23,000 Korean missionaries who are foreign long-term missionaries working overseas. And that is twice the number of all the foreign missionaries that are now being sent out from all of Europe. And so you can kind of get a feel of how large this movement is just by looking at even one country like Korea.
We're talking with Dr. Marv Newell. He's the Senior Vice President of Missio Nexus, a network of evangelical mission agencies, churches, and training centers in North America. Can you tell us just a little bit about Missio Nexus and how that sort of came to be?
Why, sure. Actually, Missio Nexus is a new name for two very old mission associations back in 1917, of all things. The IFMA, the Interdenomination Foreign Mission Association, which is a group of agencies that pulled together, mission agencies, to become an association, was formed. And then another group in 1946 called the EFMA. And then these kind of traveled parallel for several decades together. And then in the year 2012, right at the beginning of the year, we merged the two together to become what is now known as Missio Nexus. So it represents over 200 mission agencies across North America and about 100 or so churches as well. It does also represent 35,000 North American missionaries who are working overseas at this time.
One of the things I've experienced on the field is just this constant sense of opposition, that the good news is always has a force pushing and pushing against it. And so I was just wondering, as you look at the situation all across the world, this idea of persecution and martyrdom, and what role is that playing, do you believe, in the rapid growth of the gospel in non-Western countries?
Well, Beth, you are so right. Opposition, persecution, martyrdom, they're all part of what's going on as the church continues to expand and mission continues to increase. And I would point your listeners to one book that recently came out. It's entitled Sorrow and Blood, and it's edited by Bill Taylor. That book really is an anthology. About 60 different global writers write on the issue of persecution and suffering as it relates to the church today and the mission movement. But my observation has been this, Beth, that there's three words that can summarize what's going on in this regard, and they all start with a U, so it's easy to remember, all right? Mm-hmm. First of all, persecution is universal. You'll find it on every continent of the world. Persecution, suffering, opposition, and even martyrdom is there everywhere because the church is now everywhere. And wherever the church goes, it always encounters opposition because it obviously asks for a change of worldview and mindset and the way people conduct their lives. And so opposition is experienced. And so that's universal. That's the first U. The next one is that it's uneven. You can go to a country, say, like China, and find that there's areas of China that are very, very open and there's very little opposition to the gospel, whereas there might be other provinces where it's very restrictive and very harsh. The government's very harsh against the church, and therefore people suffer greatly in a place like that. And so in any given country, you might find opposition there, but it might be applied very unevenly. And then the third word I would say is this, it's unabating. And that is this, that it will just continue to go on and on because Jesus told us so, that until he comes again, he will be opposed, his workers will be opposed, his work will be opposed, simply because it is a larger picture of the spiritual warfare that's going on, I believe, in the heavenly places, of Satan trying to hold back the message of Christ from getting to as many people as it can. So it will be unabating to the very end.
I know, you know, as you started to talk right there, you talked about how it's happening everywhere. It's universal. It's happening everywhere because the church is everywhere. I'm wondering if that after the break we can come back and talk a little bit about globalization, you know, the what that's doing, that the world seems smaller and, you know, all of those kind of things. So when you talked about it being universal, that sort of piqued my interest there. So can you come back after the break?
Sure, love to.
That would be great. You know, Beth, when Marv was talking right there, we had a conversation before the show came on today about your recent trip to Haiti, and it reminded me, you know, we don't need to go into the details, but, you know, just your opposition that you faced in the midst of some great stuff that was going on in Haiti, and I really appreciated how Marv said this isn't just physical opposition, but the spiritual opposition that goes along with it as well.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, sometimes the darkness presents itself in a way that it's undeniable, whether it's through broken down cars or broken down bodies or through messages that are misinterpreted, and sometimes it's far more subtle when the enemy masquerades as an angel of light. But without a doubt, anytime we advance the gospel and bring a light into some place where there is darkness, whether that's a house or a life or a larger place like a church or a city or a country, we're going to face that constant opposition.
Yeah, and again, I love how Mar brought it out. It's not just the physical opposition that people are used to seeing through martyrdom or through imprisonment or those things, but there is a real spiritual opposition as well that says, hey, you are going to go no farther, and we need to fight through that. Hey, I'm loving this conversation. I hope you're loving this conversation as well with Marv Newell, and we're going to continue it after the break, so you want to make sure that you come back in 60 seconds. This is Real Life with Beth and Rob. We'll be back in just a minute.
Who is Weaving Your Story? The Story Weaver series by Beth Guckenberger highlights the plight of orphans throughout the world in personal, heart-grabbing stories of loss, struggle, and redemption. The kind of redemption only God, the great story weaver, can accomplish. Written for ages 8 and up, Tales of the Not Forgotten and Tales of the Defended Ones reveal God's ability to create a story far greater than we can imagine. And the corresponding 6-part Leader's Guides on CD help turn each book's content into a simple yet powerful 6-week curriculum for any church or small group. Use both together and you have a 12-week curriculum full of fun activities, compelling stories, biblical teaching, and practical applications. Let God weave your story and see what He can accomplish for orphans worldwide. The Story Weaver series is published by Standard Publishing and is available at www.standardpub.com or your favorite Christian bookstore.
Saturday morning, wherever you happen to be, this post-Thanksgiving Saturday, out and about, or snuggling in, being glad you're not out and about, or something like that. Hey, we're having a great conversation with Dr. Marvin Newell, who is the Senior Vice President of Missio Nexus, a network of evangelical mission agencies, churches, and training centers in North America, and just some great stuff. It's obvious that Marv knows his stuff, and he's been around, and we love this topic. And so we are glad to welcome him back after the break. And before the break, Marv, I wondered if you might talk a little bit about globalization. You were talking about sort of the universality of opposition that the gospel kind of sees, that the gospel is everywhere. Well, that's kind of an offshoot of this idea of globalization. So what impact is globalization having on evangelization around the world?
Why, sure, Rob. You know, we need to just remember that globalization, another synonym for that would be interconnectedness. And so we're talking about a very interconnected world today. And the whole world is interconnected now through technology that we have, the advanced technology that makes that possible. So we have the ability to connect in unprecedented ways that no other time in history have humans been able to do this very thing. And so somebody living in central China can connect with someone in central Illinois just through the technology that's available. So this is what we're talking about, globalization. And, you know, when we think about how this is impacting the gospel, I think that one very discerning person that has helped us with this is Oz Guinness. And he has said this. He says, globalization makes evangelization easier, but it makes discipleship harder. And I think he's right on that. You see, we now have a lot of tools. We now have what are called digital missionaries who are able, in the confines of their home or their office in one part of the world, impact many other parts of the world through their interconnectedness, and many times present the gospel and using tools digitally to present the gospel. So evangelization has become easier to some degree, but it has also made discipleship harder. And I believe what he means by this is that there's so much other stuff that is non-Christian, that is just anti-God and anti-biblical things that are being promoted through globalization as well. And we all know the smut and everything else that can be accessed so readily on the internet and on your cell phone and so forth, that it's making it harder for Christians then to be discerning and to choose and to pick and to grow in the Christian experience and to actually become more and more conformed to the image of Jesus Christ. Mm. So those are the two sides of globalization.
Mm. For the listener who's hearing you and they're excited to hear about the Korean church that's exploding, they're excited to hear about we're in a phase of discipleship making because that might reflect their own heart. But they're thinking to themselves, I'm never going to be a missionary. I'm probably never going to get to go to another country. What kinds of things can the average American church goer do to participate in God's movement around the world?
Yeah, Beth, you know, it's so important that the entire church is mobilized for missions. And whether you are trained in Bible college or not, maybe you don't even have a college education, and yet you're a mother with a couple of children, and you're saying, you know, I want to be involved some way. There are always ways that we can be involved. And so we should all feel that we are a witness to the world, and we can all be involved in promoting what's called the Great Commission. Practical ways, obviously by being very supportive of those you know who have been able to go or who are on the front line even in your community, supporting them not just financially, even though no doubt that was very, very helpful, but maybe just moral support for them, encouragement to them, maybe helping them periodically with needs that they would express that are there. Obviously, praying for them, prayer is so important. We really need to believe that if God intervenes in the world, then intercessory prayer is important for us. And so all of us can see God intervene through our intercessory prayers. So praying in that way, giving emotional support to those who are in ministry, sending emails, just, you know, a word of encouragement to those. I have a daughter who and her husband are in Thailand as missionaries, and just Skyping with them every so often encourages them. You know, you can just pick up your computer and Skype with someone anywhere in the world. So these are very practical ways that anybody can be involved and call that part of their responsibility of being involved in the Great Commission.
Mark, before you go, thanks for staying after the break. And before you go, I know that in addition to all the stuff that you're doing, you've also written some books. You've somehow found time to be an author. And you have a newer book out called Expect Great Things, Mission Quotes That Inform and Inspire. So in addition to the things we're talking about today, in addition to Missio Nexus, where can people kind of find the stuff that you're involved in and perhaps look at the books you've written as well?
Well, they can go to our website, which is Missio Nexus. That's M-I-S-S-I. N-E-X-U-S, don't put two N's in that, .org, Missio Nexus, and go into the store. You can pick up some of my books are there, and other resources are there as well. And that book that you just mentioned, Rob, Expect Great Things, it's a book of 750 mission quotes that I gathered over a five-year period and put in a book, and they do indeed inform and inspire. It becomes a little manual for missions for people. So they might want to go ahead and grab that and just read these quotes that come from missionaries from the time of William Carey right up to David Platt, or from the time of Adoniram Judson right up to John Piper, and see these quotes that might really inspire them as they continue to engage in the work of Christ globally.
Yeah, and as you mentioned, you know, through prayer and the other ways that you mentioned that just the average church-going person in America can kind of get involved, one of those is just raising their awareness. And a book like that just sort of raises their awareness that the mission movement has been ongoing for hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of longer years. And so this would be a great book to sort of inspire and inform them about what's going on around the world.
And, you know, Christmas is coming up. It makes a really good gift, maybe for those in ministry that want to send something out to their supporters or constituency, or maybe just a church member that wants to help someone else along. It makes a good Christmas gift as well.
Yes. So, Dr. Newell, thank you so much. Great conversation, and we just really appreciate you being on this morning with us.
Thank you, Rob. Thank you, Beth. I've enjoyed this immensely. Thank you for the opportunity.
Absolutely.
Thanks for being with us.
Blessings to you. I love those conversations, Beth. I mean, this is a guy who obviously not just knows about missions, but has lived it. And you can just tell his passion for it as he talks. I mean, that's the stuff I really love. This isn't just an intellectual exercise for him. This is a guy who is motivated and passionate about missions.
I was also thinking about the book he has of quotes, which if you can go out and purchase it, listeners, we absolutely encourage you to do so. But if you can't, I was just thinking about what a good idea to have those kind of quotes, maybe one a day at your dinner table, and just you and your family read the quote, maybe look up on your phone right there at the table who that quote came from. Just continue to kind of grow your knowledge of how God has been moving and is currently moving around the world.
Yeah, and as I mentioned before he left the air, so much of, at least for me, you know, I'm sort of like the ADHD puppy guy, whatever's in front of my face sort of demands my attention. So a book like that or any other tool that reminds you, hey, the world is bigger than me, and God is doing things in a place that's far beyond what I know, or whatever you can do to remind yourself of that, even if it's just reading a couple quotes a day or whatever it is, it puts it right, at least it puts it right in front of my face. I'm like, oh yeah, it's bigger than I got to figure out how to pay the next bill or what's for dinner tonight, or it's, yes, God is moving around the world, and I just need to be reminded of that.
Speaking of being reminded, you and I are involved in a project that uses that digital media in order to tell a story that people can access all around the world. Why don't you tell our listeners a little bit about how they can be involved in what's happening right now?
Yeah, we just got a little time left, but we had Brian Stege on several months ago as we were starting the project. We were creating a short film documentary called One in 163 Million. You can go to the website 163million.com, which is the number 163million.com. And the project is, the initial part of the project is finished. We debuted the film back on Orphan Sunday, which was November the
3rd,
I believe, yeah. Here in Cincinnati to a huge, I was surprised, several, 500-600 people, as well as debuted the same day in Monterrey, Mexico, at the church of the subject of our documentary, Shannon Brown. And man, just the reviews on the film were overwhelmingly positive. People were, I think, shocked by the content, the quality of the film. Part of the project involved an editor, Tate Webb, who won a Sundance Film Festival Award for his documentary before. So the quality of the film, just it just was an overwhelming positive response. So what we're doing right now is there's a little bit of Shannon's story that even since this summer continues to evolve. She's graduated from high school. She's now in college. She's planning on taking a trip to Haiti. We kind of want to finish Shannon's story. So we want to expand the documentary just a couple of minutes. And to do that, we need some funds. Not a lot. Nobody's making any money. It's really just travel expenses and things like that. So if you have the heart to do so, 10, 15, 20, 50, 1,000, I don't care what it is. We don't care what it is. You can go to 163million.com, and there's a link in the lower right that says that'll take you to a crowdsourcing place where you can help us finish the film. You can also see the film at either one of those things, and it is 13 minutes worth seeing.
Oh, it's a fantastic idea in the middle of this holiday season to take 13 minutes and just focus on a life that's outside of your own and hear about how when God intersects with a heart that is lost, what it sounds like to someone to become found.
Yeah, and the beauty of what we really loved and we're intentional about in making the film is this is a story from Shannon's perspective. It's a story about what it's like to be an orphan or to be orphaned from the perspective of an orphan. And so in that way, it's a bit unique. We're not just talking about what it's like to be an orphan. We're living it with this person. So it was great. Hey, if you like this show, and why wouldn't you? It was a great show today. Or any of our other shows, they're available online at reallifewithbethandrob.com or at our Facebook page. You can get a link there as well. Or you can go to iTunes and search Real Life with Beth and Rob, and you can find this show or any other show. I don't usually re-listen to shows. I might re-listen to this one because I love the conversation today. Hey, next week we're going to have Roy Page and Steve Estes. Some really interesting, if you love stories, next week we got a couple of really great stories. So we'll hope you'll join us then.
Looking forward to it. We'll see you next week. Happy Merry Christmas.
Yep, this is Real Life with Beth and Rob, and we'll be back this time next Saturday. Hope you'll join us then. Until then, have a great week.